Good morning to all. It's a blessing to be with each other, but more than that, to be reminded of how much God has blessed us and to have this opportunity to respond to that with praise and worship and thanksgiving. But thank you for being here if you're a visitor, and it's great to see everyone. How does this combination sound to you? Peanut butter and jelly, mashed potatoes and gravy, hot corn on the cob and butter. Okay. How about these combinations? Hot mustard on a donut. Apple butter and anchovies. Now, there might be some odd person here who likes those combinations. But try this one. Spaghetti and golf balls. I don't think anybody would care to eat that. There are just some things we automatically think of that go together. Like if I said peanut butter and, I think most people would say jelly. And there's some things that just don't make sense in a way that we don't think that they go together. So I want you to think about this and see if this seems strange to you. And that is joy and obedience. Do we think of those things going together and working together? And this is not responding. There we go. Do we equate joy and obedience? Do we do that? I want you to go to the Psalms with me, and we're going to look at two Psalms, mostly look at Psalm 119. Psalm 119 is this long psalm that states something in every verse about the Word of God, the commandments of God, the truth of God, the knowledge of God. But I want you to consider, when we look at these references about God's commandments and what the psalmist says about them, the commandments are not there just to look at. They're there to obey, and that's what he's driving at. The psalmist says in verse 14 of Psalm 119, "In the way of your testimonies I delight, as much as in all riches." And then down in verse 24, "Your testimonies are my delight, they are my counselors." Verse 35, "Lead me in the path of your commandments, for I delight in it." And then there's verse 46 and 7. "I will also speak of your testimonies before kings and shall not be put to shame, for I find my delight in your commandments, which I love." Down in verse 92 of Psalm 119. "If your law had not been my delight, I would have perished in my affliction." And then verse 111. "Your testimonies are my heritage forever, for they are the joy of my heart." It's not just that the psalmist would read the commandments of God, the testimonies, the instructions of God, and then it just brought him some kind of joy just by looking at the words or hearing the words. As you can see in these references, it's what the commandments of God have done in his life. It's the solace that they are. It's the guidance that they are. It's the comfort. And he's not depicting some kind of life that was carefree and fun all the time because he had a relationship with God. He references hardships. But even in that, he found a delight in the commandments of God. And automatically, he means what he's done with them. And then there's a statement over in Psalm 40. And this is David writing here. There's no evidence David wrote Psalm 119. But David is writing, and we'll look at the similar language that he uses in Psalm 40 and in verse 8. He says here, "I delight to do your will, O my God. Your law is written in my heart," or within my heart. Some translations say, I desire here. Other translations say, I delight. And this original term here in the Hebrew means that you're inclined to something, that you are bent to something, that you're pleased with something. This is something you really want. And what David writes here is that he really wants to do the will of God. It gives him delight. In other words, he's equating joy and obedience. Do we think that they are connected? Do we equate those two? Have you ever read an online review about some restaurant you went to or some product that you purchased, and you look at what somebody else said about it and you're like, that's not my experience. The food was terrible and the service was just as bad. Or, well, I bought that same product and it was a piece of junk. Why are they raving about it? There's a disconnect there. No doubt a lot of people think that obeying God, submitting to His Word in their life, is not the thing that makes them happy. It actually makes them unhappy in a way. And to illustrate this, and this is like almost like a sermon in a sermon, but it's more of an illustration, and that is about children. Disobedient children are unhappy children. I was curious how those images would hit you. I get it. When you see a little kid act like this, there can be something amusing about it. It's not amusing when they're 15 and 20 and they're doing this. It's not cute. Or 30 or 40. Our society thinks that it's entertaining when kids throw temper tantrums. When they say ugly things to grown-ups. When they misbehave. When they take a marker and mark up the walls of the living room. It's posted. It's seen as a comical entertainment. It's not. It's not cute. Oftentimes a parent parents with the rule of, I don't want my child to be unhappy. And what they mean by that is, so I don't make them do things they don't want to do, and I let them do things that they want to do, and I know it's not good for them, but that's just how it is, because if I don't, they're just going to be unhappy. You give in and you give up. And actually the opposite happens. What you do is that you train your child to have their own way, and to act miserable to get their own way. And by getting their own way, it just leads to more misery, because they just head to the next temper tantrum or the next pouting or the next disobedience. And actually, the parents aren't training their children. The children are training their parents by acting pouty and ugly and demanding. They're training their parents to give them what they want. And in the end, that's not going to bring joy to that child. Disobedience eventually robs joy. Learning obedience is really a path to joy. It sounds like that's not the case, but it's a biblical principle. And now we need to apply it to everybody, including adults. And this is the rule, really, that the psalmist is trying to teach us. And that is, and all kinds of Bible examples show this too, and that is, indulgence robs joy. Classic case, Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve indulged themselves. They thought the fruit would give them something. It's what they wanted. They desired it. It's what they felt like doing in the moment. And when they got what they wanted, they got heartache and sorrow and pain. Indulgence robs joy. Now, we understand there's a difference between happiness and joy. And when the Bible uses joy, it's usually not talking about what we think of regarding happiness. Happiness is temporary. Joy is lasting. Happiness is linked to immediate desire. Joy is tied to what is eventually good, what is lasting. Happiness is dependent on circumstances. Joy can transcend circumstances. Joy can triumph over circumstances. You can have joy in spite of your situation because of the disposition of your heart and mind. The Bible teaches that there is great joy and the greatest joy in knowing and obeying the will of God. Now, this is an age-old battle because we all have a selfish will. We humans think that what we want selfishly, that what we desire, that what we crave in the moment, and even we can think that to do what we want to do, which means to rebel and be liberated, brings benefits. That was the first human mistake. The very first human mistake was, I'm going to do what I want to do right here in this moment. And it led to tragedy. And things haven't changed. It's the ultimate human error to think that I'm going to do what I want to do and that's going to make me happy. The greatest misery we'll ever know in this life, and especially the next life, the greatest misery we'll ever know will come from disobeying God and the consequences that follow. But obedience to God, it just really does lead to the best stuff. It really does lead to the best life. It leads to an inner joy that nobody can take away from you and no situation can rob you. There's peace to it. There's an abiding joy. By submitting to Him and being in harmony with the Creator, it's how we were designed to be. And when we try to find joy other ways, we'll mess it up. And since the Word of God, the Son of God, took on human flesh and showed us God, but also experienced the human plight, His example is instructive here. And it's seen in over in the book of Hebrews in a couple of statements. Hebrews chapter 5, and this is more about this paradox about deity being in flesh. But as a human, Jesus had to do certain things, which included obedience. And the Hebrew writer says in the 5th chapter, verse 8, although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. Jesus didn't learn as if he was ignorant. He didn't learn in the sense that he didn't have an understanding. He learned in the sense that he took on human flesh and he experienced it. And by experiencing life in human flesh and doing the will of the Father and submitting as he lived as a man on earth, he experienced that and came to know what it was like. This is the idea of acquiring an experience in the sense of learning. And Christ learned obedience the hard way, by suffering. He didn't rebel, but his obedience had a price. But look how the Hebrew writer just explains this same thing over in chapter 12. where in verse 1, he's instructing us to follow Christ. And then he turns to Christ and he says, therefore, since we are surrounded, this is Hebrews 12, 1, therefore, since we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Now that's a package there. And it says that Jesus knew joy in dying on the cross. He knew joy by embracing the suffering that came through obeying the Father's will to die on the cross. But it was not something sadistic. Oh, there's joy in dying. No, it's what it led to. And what it led to was the accomplishment of our salvation. And what it led to was his triumph over death and sin, where he rules now supreme at the right hand of God. It's what it led to. That's what brought him joy. By obeying, even when it was difficult and sacrificial, he accomplished so much good. And he did the Father's will. So what Jesus is teaching us is that there's a joy in obedience, even when it's costly, even when it's hard. But here's some things to consider regarding how we think about this and how we can better think about this. And that is, first of all, we will experience joy in obedience when our relationship with God is utmost. It's what matters the most. Listen, we can't make everybody happy all the time, now can we? It just doesn't happen in life. In any circumstance, in family, in the workplace, on the highway. I mean, I go the speed limit and I'm in everybody's way. I mean, just people would run me off the road because I'm doing the speed limit. And they get aggravated at me. And you know what? I don't care. It doesn't bother me that I'm not driving like they want me to. Now, if I'm riding down the road and I'm driving and Lori is with me and she doesn't like something about my driving, let's say this is hypothetical. And she says something to me about my driving, that's different. And even when I bristle at it, why do I bristle at it? Because I care for her and what she thinks matters to me. So, it causes us unhappiness when the people we care about that are important to us aren't happy with us. Is God the chief relationship? Is God the most important relationship? Then if so, and we're obeying God and we're walking with him, then there is a joy that comes from that, and there's a joy that we have even when other people aren't happy with us. It's like an insulated relationship. If things are right with me and God, nothing else matters. I can survive it. It may not be pleasant. There may be challenges to it. But if I'm right with God, then way down inside me, I'm okay. There's a peace there and there's a joy there. That's what it means to have joy when you obey. It also comes when you trust God. Obedience is not joyful when you're doubting God, when you're suspect of God, when you don't understand he has your best interests at heart. We had cows growing up, and we had a corral thing and had a chute, and I would help my dad with the cows, and sometimes there was a cow that needed some medicine, or maybe there was a cow that had a wound or something, and it was a job to get that cow in that corral area and then get that cow in the chute and then lock it in there and work with it, and as soon as you open the door to let them out of the chute, they ran like you were trying to murder them. The cow didn't understand that we were trying to help that cow. Your dog, when you take your dog to the vet, are they in a good mood? I don't, you may have a strange dog, but most dogs sort of suspect, I'm not going to like this. And they'll shake or they'll bow up in the back seat, and you'll get them out of the car and you have to drag them in, or our dog was little, so it really couldn't do it. It would just shake. Just shake. Our little dog lived to be almost 17 years old. I think the dog would never die. Because we kept that dog healthy, and part of that was taking it to the vet and getting shots and getting tended to and all. That dog didn't understand that. You ever have an aquarium? And you have to clean that aquarium every now and then. If not, it gets unhealthy in that water and the fish will die. Do the fish like being taken out of the aquarium and you net them out and you put them? No, they don't like that. They don't understand what you're doing. You're trying to keep them in a healthy environment. We are a more advanced creature than a cow or a dog or a fish. And we have the capability of learning about God and learning about his history and how he's dealt with human beings, how he's dealt with his people. We have the ability to understand that though we have limited vision, God is trustworthy. And even though we don't understand some things that are happening, we know God. And when we trust him and do what he wants us to do, there's joy in that. But obedience only leads to joy if you trust him when you obey. And our values and priorities and goals have to be godly and right and good. I mean, if these kinds of things are our values, that we want to be pleasing to God and acceptable to God, that we want to do right by other people as God teaches us, that we want to have a healthy, growing soul in the Lord, that we want to be a moral and righteous person because that's what he wants in us and how he's taught us, that we care about the souls of other people, that eternity and heaven are important to us. If these are our true priorities, then we'll see that obeying God is a good thing and will bring us joy. But if we're selfish in our relationships, if we have fleshly desires where we want to indulge our flesh, if we want status and position and power over others, if having possessions are more important than spiritual things to us and the approval and the admiration of other people, I don't know how we'll ever have joy. That's a recipe for misery. And when we come upon the will of God that wants us to be otherwise, well, it'll be a burden to us. I don't want to do that. This is what I want. When you feel that burden about the commandments of God and you just bristle at them, and we do, we're challenged by them, but we're just constantly like a tug of war with them, something's wrong with our values. Something's wrong with our priorities. What is important to us is amiss. Because when we have the right values, we look at obedience differently. And thus it brings more joy. And also, if we focus on long-range blessings and not immediate desires and pleasures, then how we look at obeying the commandments of God is different, and we'll find more joy in them. You know, obeying God is not the best move if you want what you want selfishly today. That's not the best move to obey God. But if you have long-range spiritual aims and goals, that's the path. And this is like any exercise in any discipline. Saving money, physical workouts, learning to play an instrument or to perform a certain craft. You got to do the thing over and over and over and over, and you just got to keep at it. And then the next thing you know, you're able to accomplish that. And there are blessings from it, and you feel good about it. Do we understand that obeying God today and obeying God early in the day and obeying God in the middle of the day and obeying God in the evening and then tomorrow obeying God again when we get up and obeying God, do we understand where that's leading? The choices of our activities, how we treat other people in our relationships, our impulses of anger and sexual desires and longing for people to admire us and praise us and all those kinds of things. By obeying the will of God in those things, we're choosing a certain path and it's going somewhere. Christ didn't say, he didn't think this way, because Christ knew what the plan was. And even though he prayed for the cup to pass, he wanted the Father's will to be done. And he spoke of what was going to happen. He spoke of what would happen when the Son of Man would be lifted up. He knew what it would accomplish. And that's why he did it. He didn't say, well, I'm going to go to the cross and die, you know, because that's just what I'm supposed to do and that's it. I'm just going to go die. No. His death accomplished our salvation. The shedding of his blood was the cleansing agent of our putrid sins. He knew that though they killed him on the third day, he would resurrect. He predicted it. And then, after appearing to his people, he ascended to heaven and took his place as ruler of the universe. That's why he obeyed. It's what it led to. And you see, obedience to the will of God is doable if you can have that long-range vision, spiritual vision. Obedience to God even becomes a joy. I mean, isn't that the trick on taking a hard, long trip? You know, when do we get miserable about a trip? Oh, I got to do all this packing. Or I get on the road and the traffic's bad. Or this airport is crowded. Or I don't think we're ever going to get there. We got lost. You know, the map is outdated or whatever. The GPS misdirected us. That's how we get aggravated. But if we could ever just keep focusing on where we're going to end up, all that stuff's manageable. It's like Yogi Berra. I don't know if you know Yogi Berra. I'm going to throw a Yogi Berraism out. But he was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame, and he and his family were driving to Cooperstown for the ceremony, and they got lost. And his family was a little aggravated about, you know, Dad was driving, and they're lost. They're not going to get there. And he said, yeah, we're lost, but we're making good time. That's it. Yeah, this trip is hard, but we're on this trip, and it's going somewhere. He knew they'd eventually get there, and they did. All it matters is that we get there. It doesn't matter how hard it is and all the wrong turns and all the detours and how congested it is and how tired we get and how frustrating it is. All that's going to matter is that we get there. And when we get to eternity, it's all going to be worth it. And realizing that along the way, I'm going to obey God, but it's leading me somewhere, that's where we find the joy. It's like we know a secret. It's like we know that at the end of this long, hard life, there's just this wonderful treasure awaiting us. And other people, they're just plugging away on the trip, and the trip is hard and difficult, and they don't know where it's leading. And they feel like they're just going around in circles. But see, we have the secret. We know where this is going. He's told us, and we know what's at the end. So, well, you know, I grew up way up in the Appalachian Mountains way up in the middle of nowhere in Virginia. And it was a coal mining area, and it was an area that for many years was just had extreme poverty. And I was very blessed. When I came along, the economy was actually really booming at the time. And but I mean, I had ancestors that lived, when I say dirt poor, I'm telling you, their floor in their homes were dirt. They were dirt poor. And what happened in the early 20th century, really before the coal mining really got going very strong, it was when the timbering was still going strong. Some merchants in Kingsport, Tennessee, which is over the mountain here in the Tri-Cities in Tennessee, a group of merchants from Kingsport, Tennessee, wanted to do something for the poor people of Appalachia up in Virginia. And so they got together this train, and they put passenger cars on it, and they called it the Santa Train. And they got a guy to dress up like Santa, and they filled these cars with candy and toys and books. And this started in the early 20th century, and they would go up into the little mining communities, and they would stop at the railroad depots, and Santa and other people would throw these things out to the side of the tracks, and people would come and with their kids and get them, and then the train would move to the next station. Well, even after the poverty thing got better up in that area, it was a habit, and even to this day, they still do it. It's called the Santa Train. And when I was a kid, they were doing it. And I can remember going with my dad down to meet the Santa Train. Now, at this point, there were no passenger trains coming into my county. It was all coal trains. Big old long trains of coal car after coal car. And along the tracks of every railroad was dirt and coal because the coal would fall off. It was nasty and dirty. It was an industrial tool. People didn't ride trains in and out of there. But once a year in early December on some cold Saturday morning, all these little mountain communities, the people would flock down to the nearest railroad station and the Santa Train would come through. And I remember Dad had me up on his shoulders once and I could see the train coming and Santa pulled up and they were throwing things and people were grabbing the candy and the toys. And it was just the neatest experience. I can just see it in my head to this day. I remember Dad scooped up this little paperback book about a lion, and I remember having that book about a lion. Why would we go down on an early December Saturday morning and stand along the railroad tracks? Because we knew the Santa Train was coming. What if my parents were the only ones who knew about the Santa Train? And they took us down there, and there we were, all by ourselves. And nobody around. And people go by and say, what are they doing there? Why are they standing beside those nasty railroad tracks and those trains, those coal cars are going to come rumbling by? It's not a safe place. It's not a clean place. What are those people doing standing there? What if we're the only ones who knew the Santa Train was coming? Oh, we get up early on a Saturday morning and we go down there and stand in the cold because the Santa Train was coming. There's no Santa. I'll make sure I don't mislead you. The train's coming. The Lord with treasure is coming. And if we would act accordingly in obedience for his arrival, then we'll reap richly. And even when we are called to obey, we'll do it with joy. Because he's coming. You see, this reflects a fundamental shift when our thinking can go from I have to obey to I get to obey. Or as the psalmist would say, I delight in what God commands me to do. It's when you can see it that way as a blessing, then you'll find joy. The best joy of all. Brother Hilton has another song for us. And as we blend our voices and sing in thanksgiving and praise to God, and as we sing to instruct and encourage one another, then we are prepared today to assist any person in obeying the gospel of Christ. If today you're willing to confess your faith that Jesus is the Christ, if you want to make the commitment to turn and repent of sin, then we'll help you to be baptized into Christ today, where by his blood, by faith, you can be cleansed and you can stand right behind Christ and start to follow him all the way to eternal life. If you need to respond to the gospel call, we'll be happy to help you once you come as we stand and sing.